From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of June 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later, the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will join us to look at the cash grain market. We'll hear about the agricultural weather forecast from Chesapeake Energy. And along the way today, Carl Bradley, plant pathologist from University of Illinois Extension, will tell us whether it's a good idea or not to spray a fungicide on your corn for plant health and, well, growth, and maybe even for diseases that aren't there in your field yet. But we'll let him tell you more about that later as we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find more from us online at willag.org.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood and Paul Stevens of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finish sharply higher. July corn up 20 cents at $5.99.5 on its settlement price. We'll give you the electronic finish, too. It finished at $6 and a penny, up 21.5 cents. And September futures at $5.38 and a quarter, so the finish at 28 and three quarters higher. And December futures, $5.35 and a half, up 29.5 cents. March corn at $5.47 and a half at the end of the electronic trade, 29 cents higher. May at $5.55, up 28 and three quarters. And July at $5.60, up 25 and a half for next year. December of 2013 at $5.35 and three quarters, up 24 and three quarters. July soft red at $6.29 and three quarters, up 20 and a quarter for the day. And December futures there at $6.72 and a half, up 27 and a quarter. July soybeans in Chicago, $13.89. The end of the electronic trade at 2 o'clock, 13 cents higher. August at $13.73 and three quarters. Up 16 and 3 quarters. September at $13.52, 20 cents higher. November beans at $13.39 and a half, 25 and a half cents higher. January futures, $13.38 and a half, up 21 and 3 quarters. The March at $13.08 and a quarter cents, up 18. In May at $12.88 and 3 quarters, up 15 and a half cents. July bean meal at $4.13.60, up 3.50. July bean oil at $48.66, 22 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the August at $117.97 and a half, up $1.32 and a half. August feeders at $156.12 and a half, a dime higher. And the June lean hogs at $94.75, up 54 cents. July, $2.42 and a half higher for the day. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. July crude oil at $82.80 a barrel, $1.22 lower. Ethanol at $2.74, up 4.7 cents. And the natural gas at $2.64 and a half. That's 17.8 cents higher. Heating oil at $2.60 and 9 cents, down 3.7 cents. That's diesel fuel. And the gold futures at $1,625.70 an ounce, down $1.30. U.S. dollar at 81.95 is up 0.32. The CRB index at 273.62. That's 1.39 higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area yet this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 93 degrees. It'll be breezy with a south-southwest wind at 23 to 25 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 30 this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 71. Breezy, a south-southwest wind between 13 and 20 miles per hour this evening. And then on Tuesday, mostly clear skies, a low of 71 degrees, a south-southwest wind at 10 to 16, gusting to 26. Wednesday during the day, sunny, and a high of 92. With a south-southwest wind at 10 to 15. Wednesday night, clear at a low of 73. Thursday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly sunny, a high of near 89 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy at a low of 69. Friday, sunny and 86. Friday night, partly cloudy and 67. On Saturday, sunny skies and 88 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 70. And by the time we get to Sunday, mostly sunny skies and a 94-degree temperature for the top. We'll talk more about the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line to help us look at what's happened in Chicago at the futures markets from the CME Group, and this one, of course, is in Bloomington, Illinois, is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the market was moving sharply higher in the corn, I suppose, led by the corn. And most everything that I saw said, it's going to be windy, so we should go higher. I thought that was kind of a unique way to jump, but hot too, I suppose. Is all weather-driven today?
A good chunk of it is. We got hotter temperatures in the forecast, and a lot of tassels are starting to shoot, so we're entering the pollination phase in some areas, and so it's going to be critical to have some decent weather. Plus, too, as the day went on, or actually morning went on, more confirmation that there's a large portion of the Corn Belt that missed the rain here in the east, southeast particularly, and that unless they receive some rain this weekend here, they're going to see a substantial setback in their conditions that they haven't already. This afternoon's crop condition report expected to show a 1-3% drop out of that good to excellent category, but the east is probably going to show a little bit more significant drop versus the western corn belt. But we're in the time window of the growing season and marketing year where weather is real sensitive to the grain complex. The grain complex just thrives on forecast to forecast, and with the world demand base that we've built over the years and this production that could go up and down according to what the yield prospects are can really get this grain market quite exciting here over the next 30 to 45 days.
Over the weekend, the people of Greece voted, and it appears, at least from the financial side, that the markets were happy with the way they made their election of new leaders, and that they're expecting the euro to continue to be the primary way that people in Greece will spend the money.
Well, for now, I mean, gosh, that's going to change probably 24 hours from now. I have never seen anything be so bullish, so bearish in a matter of, you know, a few days, but we've got to remember, they've done significant damage. This economic situation they've created just is not going to go away with just new leaders. There's going to be some pain yet to endure. Go back in history, particularly Japan, it took years upon years upon years to finally regain world confidence and get pointed in the right direction. You can have all the bailouts in the world, but somebody's going to have to pay for it. And that's not going to be very much fun. And right now, as you mentioned, it is somewhat supportive that we just didn't see a complete meltdown, per se. It's workable, but there's going to be some people not happy on the outcome of it. But that's what we need to do is to see world stability and ideas we're working in the right direction to keep the market comfortable. Otherwise, we lose this investor confidence. It could be not pretty at all.
Why, when you have a day where December corn jumps 30 cents, did the November contract in the soybeans only garner a 25.5 cent gain?
Huge volume in the spread, unwinding or rolling, probably be the best way to put it. Commodity funds have been long the July corn. Commodity funds along with July beans, they continue to roll out of these positions. They're a little bit more quicker than the average person. They don't wait till the day before to move on out to avoid the delivery process. So we're seeing the function of the market here move on out. You'll see confirmation in the morning. You'll see open interest go down in the Julys and open interest go up in the December corn and the November bean. contract. The thing that would reverse that would be, as far as price strengths go, if we see some near-term demand here on some deliveries as we get towards the end of the month here, Todd.
The May wasn't particularly orderly on the way out. Do you think July will be?
We got to have this. We got to keep everybody's interest here. We got to have some disaster somewhere or somebody getting squeezed or something. That's boring. Just
okay. Well, good enough. On that note, I guess we'll have a whole lot more to talk about in the future, won't we?
Yeah, that's the thing. This is the most exciting times, and we've talked about, you know, 30, 40, 50 cents straight up, 30, 40, 50 cents straight down. You know, the outside money interest in the marketplace, we're going to have a lot of zigging and zagging. So, yeah, you're going to have your hands full for the next 30 days, Todd.
All right. Well, we'll have fun. You'll have your hands full, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you much. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. He's in Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Well, the Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. You can dial us up for either the opening or the closing numbers. Actually, the opening numbers won't happen anymore after next Monday the 25th, really. Well, kind of still. The opening will come. But the closing numbers will come after 2 o'clock, as the open outcry will be extended to that time frame. You can dial up at 217-333-3434, about 10:15 and 3:15 each and every day. Or you can visit us on the smartphone at m.willag.org. That's m.willag.org. No www in front of that one. Now here's Dave with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Greece's new coalition government, expected to be formed later this week, is poised to ask the country's creditors for an additional 2 years to meet its fiscal targets. The extension will likely be floated at a meeting of Eurozone finance ministers as early as this Thursday, and will likely be discussed at a European Union Leaders Summit in Brussels on June 28th. On Sunday, Greece's conservative New Democracy won the most seats in parliament. The election was seen as a de facto referendum on the country's future inside the Eurozone. A Greek exit from the currency union had threatened consequences for other ailing European nations and the global economy. Meanwhile, reports released this morning say bad debts held by Spanish banks rose to an 18-year high in April, a sign that more companies and households in the Eurozone's fourth largest economy fell behind on debt payments. According to the central bank data, 8.72% of the loans held by banks, or $193 billion, were more than 3 months overdue. That is the highest ratio since April of 1994. Senator James Inhofe, a Republican from Oklahoma, is calling on the EPA to take additional steps to ensure that renewable identification numbers being sold are valid, rather than penalizing companies that buy fraudulent credits in good faith. Refiners and other non-renewable fuel companies are required to purchase the biofuel credits, known as RINs, under the Federal Renewable Fuels Standard. In a letter to EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson, Inhofe asked that the agency respond within 14 business days about its plans to improve its enforcement program. California Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein has offered a farm bill amendment that would codify a recent agreement between the Humane Society of the U.S. and U.S. egg producers regarding the treatment of battery hens. Under that agreement, egg farms would double the cage space that they provide for each laying hen. A report by Rabobank International Food and Agribusiness Research and Advisory says the rising prevalence of weed resistance is increasing production costs. The report estimates that soybean farmers in the South who have experienced the most weed resistance in the U.S. spend $40 to $45 more per acre to control weeds. Farmers in the southern Corn Belt are paying $30 more an acre. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. One other news note on the day, U.S. EPA has cleared the way after 3 years of testing for the actual sale of E15 to cars, trucks, and SUVs made after 2001. It is now legal for stations to sell E15, though some state and simple distribution hurdles must be overcome. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. This morning, Carl Bradley, plant pathologist for University of Illinois Extension, located here on campus, dropped by my Mumford Hall studio to talk about fungicides and the potential for application to corn and soybeans this year. You'll want to stay with us to hear what he has to say. I first started by asking Carl exactly how clean of disease farmers' fields were this year. Most often it's said that there's not much out there.
Right, yeah. So it's been rather clean for diseases just because of lack of rainfall, really, has been the primary driver of that. There could still be some foliar disease problems that occur if we continue to get some additional rain. Especially on susceptible hybrids and maybe those corn-on-corn situations. But certainly, if you're in an area where it's been rather dry and you just aren't seeing any diseases out there on the leaves, continue to monitor, but it's unlikely that you're going to need a fungicide in those situations where we're really dry.
You have data to back up that statement?
Well, we've been looking at foliar fungicides for the last 4 or 5 years, and not too long, actually over the winter, during our corn and soybean classics, I presented some information where I had summarized data from 2008 to 2011, and over that period of time, we have a total of 28 site years, so that was 4 years, and we had about 7 locations each year, so that's the 28 site years. What I was able to do with that data were to break those down into different disease levels. So in some of those situations, we had high disease pressure. In others, we had sort of mediocre. In others, we had very low to no disease pressure. And the way it sorted out, the way it all fell out, was obvious that when you had a high disease pressure situation, that's when these fungicides are really going to pay off. For instance, in 11 of those 28 site years, we had disease pressure that we would call fairly high when we were rating the diseases after the fungicide application. In their untreated checks, we had over 15% severity, which means that 15% of that leaf was blighted with diseases. In that case, our average yield response was almost 13 bushels an acre, and if we went by getting a return of 5 bushels an acre as sort of your profitable point, that happened 100% of the time in that situation. However, contrasting to that, 13 of those 28 locations had very low disease pressure, less than 10% severity, and our average yield response in those situations was only 0.7 bushels an acre, and only 23% of the time would we have made at least a 5 bushel an acre yield response. So, diseases are very important when you're making foliar fungicides. And it's kind of a no-brainer, obviously, because fungicides are the main reason to spray a fungicide should be to manage diseases, protect against diseases. So, I think the way this season is progressing so far, and especially in some of those very dry areas, that if that weather pattern continues, we're not going to see a lot of foliar diseases in those situations.
Do you have similar data for soybeans? Is it as easy to discern or not?
We do. We have also evaluated fungicides on soybean for several years now, too. I think as I look at the data, it seems to be a little more cut and dry on corn, where it's seems to be very related to disease pressure. When we look at soybean, there's really not a lot of what we call most important diseases of foliar diseases of soybean. Most of the most important diseases of soybean are attacking the roots, generally. Things like sudden death syndrome, soybean cyst nematode, Phytophthora root rot. However, we do have a few foliar diseases. Septoria brown spot is very common, but we often don't see it as a major problem unless we get a lot of late season rainfall, and so that disease moves up into the upper canopy and starts to defoliate leaves, and then that's when we see a problem. Frog eye leaf spot can also be a major problem. Of all the foliar diseases, that's probably the one that causes the most yield loss when it occurs, but we don't see that in every field in Illinois. It seems to be a little more common in southern Illinois and some of the areas that are close to the rivers as well. We tend to see a little more of frog eye leaf spot. But certainly when we have a lot of frog eye leaf spot, we've seen a pretty good yield response with the foliar fungicide, no doubt there. In some cases, even though we've had Septoria brown spot present, we don't always see a yield response there. So the associations are a little more difficult, at least in my data set, with disease and yield response on soybean, but as they are on corn, which seems to be pretty cut and dry.
That's Carl Bradley, Extension Plant Pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I spoke with him this morning. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Amy Murray from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County is on the phone line to take up the cash grain segment with us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Amy.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I bet farmers were a whole lot happier today than they were on Friday.
Yes, sir.
Were they wanting to make any new sales, or are they now bulled up and ready to hang on again?
Now, you know, we bought a little bit this morning, but I think most people are pretty bulled up, especially with the market rally this afternoon.
Is that right? Is it a rightful for them to be bulled up, or are you more skeptical than that?
I'm kind of in the bull camp right now. You know, we did get a nice little shower here Saturday, and, you know, things around here look a lot better. But across the board, we got, you know, not as much as what we need. And with a hot, dry forecast and extreme heat, you know, next week in the forecast, I think we're really dangerously close to needing another inch. So,
when you talk to the home office, what are they telling you about Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio as far as coverage for rainfall and how short they might be?
Yeah, Indiana is dry. They didn't get anything over the weekend like we did here. A couple areas might have got a little bit, but for the most part, there is a huge gap over the state of Indiana, so they're pretty negative, their crop conditions over in that area. Ohio got a few tenths, again, better than zero, but not going to be a savior by any means, and same for Michigan. So I think right here in central Illinois, we were the lucky spot this weekend. So.
And your bids for the day are what?
My bids for this afternoon are going to be 641 for cash corn, 510 for this fall. We're at 527 for GN13, 506 for fall of 2013. Cash beans are at 1381, fall beans at 1314, Jan beans at 1313, and next fall beans of 13 are at 1164. And then our cash wheat bid today for new crop is at 635.
Thanks so much, Amy.
Thanks, Todd.
Amy Murray is with the Andersons. I'll be back in just 2 minutes with the Ag Weather Forecast.
It's National Cherry Tart Day. Sweet cherries date back to prehistoric times in Asia. By the way, that story about George Washington and the cherry tree is more fiction than fact. Parson Weems attributed the anecdote to an aged lady who was a distant relative and, when a girl, spent much of her time who referred to George as cousin. Really, we cannot tell a lie. It's also International Picnic Day. In Europe during the 14th century, the earliest picnics were medieval hunting feasts in England, featuring hams and other baked meats as well as pastries. picnicking really came into its own during the Victorian age. Picnics, as Americans know them, date back to the middle of the 19th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1865, Edmund Ruffin died. He was a pioneer in the study of soil chemistry in the U.S. Ruffin investigated the possibility of using lime to raise pH in peat soils to improve agricultural productivity. In 1892, macadamia nuts were first planted in Hawaii. In 1981, the first genetically engineered vaccine was announced by USDA. The vaccine, using gene splicing, was designed to prevent hoof and mouth disease. And in 1993, African honeybees killed a small dog in Tucson, Arizona, and were dubbed by the media as killer bees. Their original source was from crossbreeding with tropical African bees imported into Brazil for experimental work. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Josh Starr is on the phone line from Chesapeake Energy to look at the weather forecast and tell us a little bit about what happened over the weekend. It was a nice little rainfall in a part of the Midwest and the Corn Belt. Let's start there, please, Josh.
Yeah, the swath of rains over the weekend, which quite frankly were a bit more than expected across central portions of Illinois, spanned right across the southern tier of Iowa, across the central part of the state. Areas such as Champaign, Peoria picked up over an inch, while areas to the south there of Springfield, Lincoln weren't so lucky, picked up around 0.4 of an inch. And then the winter was in and around Kankakee, where heavy thunderstorm activity dropped about 4 inches of rain, and then activity died off rather quickly as you moved into northwestern Indiana. So that's the line that picked up the best rains. Areas to the north, not so great. Areas out there, not so great. And, you know, looking ahead at the forecast from a strictly precipitation standpoint, that is the only opportunity we have to bat down the drought that is seemingly developing here across the state. For the next 10 days to even 2 weeks, a dominant ridge of high pressure starts to build across the central U.S. And hot day out there today, we're going to see a number of those types of hot days over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. So it's a distinctly hotter than normal period to end a month, and a drier than normal pattern, which is more of the same from what we've been in. You can trace it all the way back to March.
And it's windy, too. Why is that the case?
Yeah, that's a great question. Very windy, and this is a different beast of heat, if you will, compared to what we saw in 2011, 2010. The heat is building across the Rockies and pluming out into the central U.S., and these are called, we call these heat bursts or other terms, but when the heat builds like that, it bursts the heat, and it's windy, so it's a dry wind rather than the humid, very dew point laden air that we had the past two summers. So the heat the next week, the 10 days, will be more so on your daytime maxes versus the nighttime mins, at least in contrast to the past 2 years.
So it'll dry things out pretty quickly.
Yeah, things are going to dry out very quickly. So even the areas that picked up 1.5-2 inches of rains in the weekend rains, that should sustain for about 7 days. And I think come week two of the forecast, that last week of June, everyone will be talking about needing rains to boost topsoil, even those areas that got good rains here over the weekend.
Hey, one other note on the weekend rain. Just south of Kankakee, I saw what I thought was just an unbelievable number, 7.5 to 8.5 inches, something along those lines.
You know, Todd, in our data that we have, and it's somewhat data-driven by observations as well as data point, there is a tiny pinpoint area, 6 to 9 inches. So that's probably right.
Okay, well, I saw it come from a farmer on a Twitter feed, so that's a heck of a...
Very isolated.
Well, you wouldn't want to see it. That's a good way to get a good flood. All right. Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Todd.
All right. That is Josh Starr. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for a Monday afternoon. Wraps us up this day. Remember that starting on the 25th, that's a week from today, on Monday. The open outcry pit in Chicago will be extended for 45 minutes to 2 o'clock, so the closes and settlements will all come at the same time for the open outcry and the electronic trade. So R158, if you happen to listen to that settlement price that comes from the home station at 158, won't be available after that anymore.